Yes.
So, yeah, we're going to be there. The four of us from the sub and then a bunch of other guys on the other BCB travel game. So if you're listening and you're going to be there, let us know and hunt us down and we'll pound a beer or something. So it'll be fun. I'm thinking of doing some kind of live videos from if we tailgate or party or what the fuck ever,
Yeah.
Let you guys in on what's going
on. That beer is
going
to be a Steel Reserve, by the way. That's Chrome's rule, not ours.
Yeah.
But I fully endorse that, so be prepared.
Yeah, Steel Reserve is fucking disgusting, but, I'm down. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Real Till Podcast. I'm joined today by Mr. Locksman himself. How's it going today, Locks?
Good. I feel like shit. I think I got sick from the Denver trip, but it was all worth it.
Nice, nice. We're going to talk about that in a minute. I'm going to let you tell us all about it. Kromatos is studying and taking some tests, or he's doing some really nerdy shit. I don't know. He'll be back next time. He's actually going to be with us this weekend. So he's off doing that tonight. We were going to grab another guy who is up in Denver this week, Singles Racer. He's also the Wednesday Frog guy. He was going to jump on tonight with Locksman, and these guys were going to talk about the Denver game, but he got held up by work, so we're gonna try to pull Razor in again some other time. But I also do want to shout out Shockmeister on the sub. We were gonna bring him in this weekend, but then we kind of threw a curveball, and we're going to just let Locksman tell us about the Denver game this week. And we Shockmeister, if you're listening, you are at the top of our list, and we will get to you soon. But today is pretty much going to be all about week four, Jags versus Denver in Denver. And Locksman was there. So how was it, dude?
Dude, it was well worth the trip. As per usual, Bold City Brigade does a hell of a job putting together these organizations. Like, Cap and the Bold City Cap and the rest of them are just amazing at it. And if you're listening to their pod, they kind of went into it, I think, briefly after the Denver trip on just how much work goes into this kind of stuff. And so if you ever go to one of these things and you get a chance to see or meet Cap, just, give him a shout out, give him some thanks. It's not just him, of course. He's just the face of it. But as he says so humbly of himself, I'm sure he's much more than that. But honestly, like, it's incredible how they pull this off. And there's other groups that do similar sort of things to this, but for being who we are, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and that fan base, it's the level of support and passion for it is just through the freaking roof. And that was well on display over the last weekend.
Right. Obviously you flew in, so you didn't take the party bus down or up or over or whatever fucking direction
that
is.
Party bus that went there.
Was there, did they not take the party or the, They not
the party
bus
is just from the party bus is from the pregame, the pregame bargate to the stadium.
Ah, I got you. I was thinking that there was like a charter that ran from like Jacksonville to Denver, which sounds really expensive.
That would be a hell of a party bus. That'd be like a 14-hour bus ride. Yeah, right. Shit. So that'd be a hell of a party bus. I don't think anyone would make it to the game, even if they took that shit up there on like Thursday.
Right. So,
but that would definitely be worth it.
So you flew in. I know you were there a couple nights early, but what is the Denver nightlife like?
Interestingly enough, a buddy said this to me, and so most of the time, me and my friends were out in just kind of the downtown Denver area. I think there's another neighborhood called Lodo or something around there. I mean, if Razor was on here, he's in Colorado, he'd probably know a lot more of the geography than I do. But downtown area, just for Friday night, We started off going to Coors Field for the baseball game out there. That was pretty sick. Tons of Jags fans kind of went up and all were hanging out in one area, like the Jack Daniels Terrace or something like that, just kind of like a free standing room kind of area with a bar there. So that was pretty sick. That kind of kicked it off. The general nightlife just around the area there is just like they have like a ton of breweries there, and they're not just like kind of generic sort of breweries that you see now, which is just basically a bar with two or three local brews that they brew themselves, and then everything else just generic kind of craft brews. Their breweries are pretty freaking legit, like, and they all had like some kind of unique spin on them. I will say that my buddy who I was hanging out there with said that the downtown Denver nightlife area reminded him just a shitload of Riverside in Jacksonville. And when he said that, I was like, you know what? It kind of is like that. It's like a little bit bigger, you know, but like, so instead of just being like one street or so, but it is very similar to that sort of feeling that you get if anyone who's lived in Jax or gone out there has gone out in Riverside, it does have that same sort of vibe and feeling. So, which is a good thing.
So how was the night before party? Did you go to that?
Yes, I did. It was awesome. It was at another brewery, but it was like this huge building, like two stories with a huge outdoor patio area. The weather was pretty nice. It was getting a little windy, but other than that, it was nice temperature. You'd have people just like, it was literally probably about the entire Bold City group and probably a few other people. It's not like at the night before thing, they were checking for wristbands or membership cards or anything like that. People were just coming and going as they please, but it was almost entirely just Jaguars fans. Bold City Brigade stickers being thrown up everywhere. Just probably, I would say, like 250 to 300 Jags fans all in one place in a separate town. And I kept saying in like a drunken stupor to my friends, like, look, it's really fun when you're in Jacksonville for a game, especially a game that everyone's feeling confident about and you're out drinking or whatever. But it hits a whole different way when you're in someone else's town, like basically on vacation. And it's like you just with a bunch of people that you know, or even that you don't know, you're still making friends and stuff. I met like, you know, at least a half dozen people that, you know, got their contact information and going to be hanging out with some of them again, hopefully here this coming weekend in Charlotte.
Nice. Well, I know just from my personal experience at games in Jacksonville, like the nightlife in like, in, you know, downtown Jacksonville around the stadium, it's like everything just kind of shuts down
trash.
Like really early, you know, so it's like there's not much. Like the last game I was at in the Bengals game in 2017, like after the game it's just dead. Like I don't know where everyone goes after football games, but there's like one bar open and like there are like five people in it, and it's like there's not much nightlife there. There's like not much to do at all.
You pretty much have to walk down to Riverside, which is a decent hike from the stadium. But if it's after the game and it's, you know, nice weather at night or something, then it's pretty nice to do that. Otherwise, you're either going out to the beach if you're staying out there, or I think there's some stuff down in San Marco and Southside that some people will go. Aardwolf's always a popular spot, or at least it used to be when I lived in Jacksonville, but I think the typical move for me was to scurry on over to Riverside. I did that after the Thursday night football game, but at that point it was already getting pretty late, and unfortunately some people have lives. I don't, but they have assume have some work to do on Friday.
Right. So yeah, we talked about the nightlife, the night before party. How hard do the BCB guys go?
Dude, I mean, everyone knows. Everyone goes pretty hard. The night before party didn't get too crazy or out of hand. I think everyone was just chilling, enjoying the whole environment. I mean, Denver itself just makes you feel like a very chill, kind of laid-back atmosphere. Game day itself, of course, everyone was getting hyped up. If you haven't tailgated with the Bold City guys before, you do circle ups where everyone runs in a circle and shotguns a beer at the end of it. It's very, very exciting, to say the least. And it usually starts when they start playing. Oh God, what is it? Enter Sandman starts playing.
Yeah, right.
Well, at the bar beforehand, the pregame bar, bar gate before the game in Denver, the DJ there who had been you know, doing pretty good at that point, started playing that song. And then everybody's like, oh shit. So it became an impromptu circle up there, which was pretty amazing. After that, everyone was feeling sufficiently hyped. The buses pulled up. Everyone poured on. Everybody's drinking on the buses on the way to Mile High. Mile High is a beautiful looking stadium. It looks a little funky the first time you're going into it because it's got this kind of like wavy like architecture to it. But I appreciate that it's not just kind of like another like square or circular bodied thing that just looks kind of like a concrete pit.
So how many White Claws did you drink?
I had a couple. I think before the game, I was mostly drinking Coors Heavy just to stick with the theme of being in Denver.
Right.
But I naturally. I think I had two White Claws. Sat next to like these three guys I didn't know on the bus ride there, and they had just grabbed some White Claws and brought them on. So I snagged a couple from them on the bus ride there. Shout out to those guys for sharing. And rolled on into the stadium, feeling pretty good about myself. I was a little toasty. I wasn't supremely bad, but I was a little toasty by the time we actually got to the stadium.
All right. So let's talk about football.
Yeah. Enough about me drinking.
I'm sure we'll still talk more about you drinking. Football, the game. So just out of mere curiosity, I know there's been like a little bit of controversy with the way like TIAA Bank does just with like the conditions of like the long lines and getting inside and like the blistering heat and everyone's fucking unhappy. Like, how was it actually getting into Mile High?
It was pretty good. Again, I'm always thankful that BCB puts on the bus ride from the wherever the pregame spot is downtown to a stadium. It never looks that far on the map, but on a game day, like even against an 0-3 Broncos team, they still show out. So it's fucking hard if you're trying to get there by car and you didn't show up there like 3 or 4 hours early to tailgate or something like that and then just walk in. So with that said, yeah, like entry into the stadium went pretty well. I don't remember there being any sort of crazy lines or anything like that. Weather was good. So now none of those issues. Although I will say like at TIAA for Thursday night football, it wasn't too terrible either. I think they changed something up after the week one debacle against the Chiefs where everyone was like passing out and dying from the heat. So hopefully they're doing a better job there for the home games.
Right. Well, let's talk about the football. What kind of view did you guys have of the game?
I started in the lower bowl and then migrated my way up to sit with Razor. Both of them, lower bowl, I was kind of in the corner, and the upper deck, I was in the 200s, but me and Razor were basically looking straight down, like down the field from, I think, the south end zone.
Okay.
It was the one that Lambeau kicked into.
Yeah.
So it made it kind of interesting. Cause during the game, you know, I was a little toasted. So I could basically tell that Fournette was having a good day, in the second half. That's kind of the crazy thing about his performance of the game is that he wasn't really doing that great in the first half. I think he only had like 35 or 45 yards. Someone on the radio on 1010 was talking about it. And, so most of the damage he did was in the third quarter, just like the rest of the offense, or excuse me, the whole second half. But, from the sight line that I could never really tell how many yards he was ripping off, because when you're looking like straight downfield, it's hard to tell like if a run went for 3 yards or if it went for 8 or 12 or something.
Right.
I think it's really only when they kind of get past the sticks do you really notice this guy's really ripping off freaking chunks here. But I could tell that, you know, they're just handing the ball off to him and they were getting first downs and moving the ball down the field.
Right. So let's talk about the first half. It was pretty brutal.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
Yeah, we'll get to the feeling in the stadium for a minute, but I know just from watching at home, it fucking sucked. I was not having a good time, and sitting here like reading the game day thread and reading the Discord game chat, like no one was having a good time. No one was optimistic during that entire first half. Fucking Flacco driving down and. Who was Herndon was Jalen's replacement, right?
Trey Herndon.
Yeah, I remember early in the game he made like a beautiful. He had a beautiful pass deflection, and then Jalen was getting psyched on the sideline, and everyone was fucking pumped. And then he just fucking gets smoked, and then he gets smoked again, and then he gets smoked for a touchdown. And I'm like, dude, this is not going to go well.
It was not going well.
I don't remember AJ getting targeted like directly once. It was just like he knew where Herndon was and he was throwing it to his side every time. So it was like,
yeah,
the defense looked so bad. The offense couldn't get anything going. The first half of that football game was not fun football to watch.
No.
How were all you guys watching that first half?
I think the feeling, at least from the, because I was with like two different Jags groups basically during the game, and I think the feeling was just like, hey, this, no matter what, it was a lot less depressed than we have been in the past. Because in the past, you know, if we go down by, how much were we down by, like 17 or so at the largest margin? They were up like what, 20-3, or it was 17-3 or something. I think it was at least two scores. So.
I think we ended up scoring like 17 unanswered when we took the lead. So
yeah, I think it was like 17-3 or so, and then we got the last field goal after the. So I think it ended up 17-6. Yeah. I don't know. It was at least two scores. So, but even with it being two scores, there was still a level of optimism that you haven't felt in the last 5 or 6 years at least. Because we knew that the offense on Minshew's back alone could still throw and air out the ball. And we have seen like those big plays coming from the wide receivers and stuff like that. So you kind of knew that the aerial attack could get us back in there. No one really expected it to be Fournette that would actually do that or play at least a significant part in that at least. But I think the real disappointing part from just the atmosphere in there and after watching it a second time through, we all kind of expected the defensive line to have a much better game than they did, considering I don't think Juwan James actually played and Ackle's been pretty garbage, and yet they didn't really do anything.
Flacco was as much shit as Flacco gets, and rightfully so. He played that game very well for the most part. He was very quick getting the ball out.
He's still a veteran who has played a lot of football and
right.
You know, usually plays it somewhat intelligently. So when you give him something to exploit like that, he's going to do it.
Right, right. And I don't know. I don't think it was lack of pressure. I think we were probably getting a decent amount of pressure, but he was just so quick getting the ball out. A three-step drop and then the ball's out of his hands.
Yep.
You know. So it's hard to get a lot of pressure on a quarterback who's getting the ball out that fast.
I don't even really know if we started bottling them up. I think they just were having so much success with those quick throws over to Trey Herndon's side just because they knew, whether it was Cortland Sutton, Emmanuel Sanders, whoever the heck, they were feasting on us.
Right. Well, they scored on us twice, and they had a field goal in the first half. We had a field goal in the first, and then we wrapped up our scoring at half.
Yeah,
with a field goal.
Yep. And I remember in the first half as well. It's disheartening to see our pass rush not being able to get home, and yet seeing Minshew get rolled up five times for five sacks in that game. I know everyone's like feeling like the offensive line is doing pretty good. I think they did pretty decent run blocking in that game, but a lot of that's because I think Denver's the inside of their defense, the middle of it, is not very strong anymore. Their edge rushers, obviously, like between Chubb, who's now out for the season, and Von Miller is, of course, they're probably the strongest part of their defense outside of their DBs. But it's disappointing to see Gardner getting hit over and over in all of these games. And on top of that, the penalties that our tackles are taking every game, both Cam Robinson and Juwan Taylor.
Right. I will say, I do want to touch on penalties. That touchdown to Chark?
Chark.
Was it?
Oh, the one that got called back?
The one that got called back. That was Chark, right?
I think so. I can't remember.
That was such a beautiful... That dude, he fucking railed that pass in there. And, dude, I was audibly excited. I screamed yes. And then I fucking saw the little yellow flag marker on the ticker on the bottom of the screen. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And it was a hold. Like, dude, those holds are... The holds are killing us, dude. The penalties.
The holds are killing us. The false starts are killing us. Everything that, and it goes. I really think it is. It's got to be like, it's got to be like these tackles, and they just have to do better because I think the one thing I'm most amazed about is that usually when Leonard Fournette does have luck and he doesn't run just straight into the back of his own lineman and gets a good gain, it always feels like it's getting called back. Because one of the linemen was holding. Now this game, that fortunately didn't happen. But I mean, it's something that's got to stop.
Sorry, I'm talking to Razor.
I got you. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure what it is. I want to touch on Leonard in a minute. Running into linemen and whatnot.
I will say Juwan Taylor right now is leading the NFL in penalties with six.
That's an interesting.
Everyone else has five or less.
That's an interesting stat. I did not realize that. And honestly, I hadn't. I don't know if it's because I've been so focused on other guys on the line, how they're performing, like guys like Norwell and Cam Robinson, that I think I've just like not paid much attention to how the other side of the line is performing, you know?
Yeah.
I will say Will Richardson needs to be on the line.
I would like it if we would quit playing these games and just start a player. I know like we keep rotating in linemen and that, I don't know. That just doesn't seem like a very often used or sustainable solution in the NFL.
Right. I think Razor may be here. Can you hear us, dude?
Ooh.
Here he is.
Hey.
Hey, there he is.
There he is.
Yeah.
You may... I think you're, like, breaking out. Like, breaking up a lot.
Plays on his phone in the car.
Yeah. Can you put together a full sentence? This is a test. No.
How about trying the auto sensitivity? Does that work at all?
Hey, I can hear you now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. First time I've ever tried using the voice chat on the mobile app.
I got you. Okay.
Yeah.
That should work. We should be able to... we should be able to talk about some stuff now. So, this is like middle of the podcast, but anyone who's listening, we are now joined by Razor. Like I said earlier, he is he's the frog guy. And he was also at the game in Denver this week with Locksman and a bunch of other Jags fans. So
I was. Very interesting experience, to say the least, or of what I remember from it.
Basically what we were just talking about was the entire first half, how like disappointing and like depressing it was to watch, and like at least from like my point of view and like reading the game day thread and reading the game day chat and the Discord, like no one was having a good time watching the first half of that football game. So Locksman was just kind of going over how it was in the stadium and from what you guys were seeing.
Absolutely, yeah. The first half of the game, just from a Jaguars fans' perspective in the stadium, haven't gone to Mile High in the past. It's an awesome stadium to be in if you are a neutral fan or a Broncos fan. But if you're an away fan in there, they can be some of the most hostile fans, depending on who you're sitting near. But it can be just so demoralizing seeing not just how poorly the team executed the first half, but then, having the fans around you, and I completely agree. It was a unique experience for me, kind of being a, an away fan and seeing the Jaguars perform poorly. But yeah, that second half going into that incredible change. And
yeah, I'll say like 99% of the Broncos fans I ran into were actually pretty decent. There was one guy who was sitting in front of me before I moved up the bowl out of the lower bowl who was being a complete asshole to all the Jags fans around him. And he had his two freaking kids with him too, so I was completely uncalled for, but I'm not going to let him kind of ruin my perspective on the rest of them, which was that they were all pretty awesome, pretty accommodating. I think the people around us were pretty good up there in that second level, but I could definitely see if this was like the Raiders or someone in there, or like a divisional opponent, how that crowd could get like really on your ass pretty quickly.
Absolutely. So I was at the Broncos Bengals game 2 years ago, and even that, not being really a divisional game, but the Broncos, I think their whole perspective, and I think this is very strong across Denver sports in general, with the exception of maybe the Rockies, is that the team is performing really well. Awesome fans, and I don't want to take away from, a lot of the great Broncos fans that are out there, and we did experience quite a few of them. But I think they see we have a lot of the same similarities that, as Jags fans, if we're getting bad, it kind of just turns into depression, and I can understand it, unfortunately, but absolutely agree, 100%.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being a Raiders fan in that stadium.
What was your perspective, like, or what was your feeling? Because I was just saying earlier before you jumped on, my feeling of the first half was, I think me and the guys I was sitting around with felt a level of kind of optimism that even when we were down two scores or so, there still was a good shot of us being able to get back in it, at least through the aerial attack. Didn't think it would be Fournette at all because, again, he did most of his damage in the second. But what were you guys feeling up there in the first half in spite of all the mishaps by the defense?
Fox, if you want to go first.
No, that's you. I already said my piece on here before, but yeah.
Razor.
Sorry, I accidentally disconnected.
Oh, no, you're good.
Sorry about that. So, I think really thinking about how, we were down, 17-6 at halftime? And I think with Minshew, especially compared to past years, love Bortles as a player, but I think at halftime, if we were down 17-6 Bortles, especially at Mile High, there's no coming back from that. But having that experience now with Minshew, we've seen, even just in week two, where he can come back and lead a drive, and he's got that poise and that confidence to be able to make plays. I never felt that we were truly out of the game. The defense obviously had some miscues in the first half, and what we ended up seeing from Lenny later on in the game was it made me feel a lot more optimistic, not only about his performance in that game alone, but moving forward, you can tell that he put in a lot of work and that he's watching films week to week and seeing that progress throughout the game, and the adjustments that they were able to make in the second half were night and day compared to teams of years past.
Yeah, I want to know what light switch they turned on at halftime to wake the team up, because holy shit, dude, it was watching two different football teams.
It really was. I think that I don't know, like the defense I felt still obviously towards the end on that last drive got chewed up a little bit, but I have no idea. Everyone in like Jacksonville media, I feel like, has been asking those questions. I don't think anyone's really gotten an answer on what specific adjustments were made. It just was like a light switch turned on, and every facet of the game just started playing better.
Right. Well, let's talk about Fournette, because he really opened it up for this team in the second half. One thing that I noticed, particularly compared to the last couple of weeks, is one thing that probably helped was that he wasn't running into stacked boxes every single time he was running. He had room to run, and that's got to be it's got to be some kind of it may be like a little respect for Minshew in the past game, but there were significantly less stacked boxes for Leonard to run through, and that had to have had a big effect on the way he was running. But other than that, like when he was getting hit at the line, he was running through arm tackles and he was rolling out of tackles and getting into open space. He was finding lanes. He was making cuts. Like he was running like a really good running back that we haven't seen the past few weeks.
I think that's the biggest difference. That the Lenny that we saw on Sunday was the Leonard Fournette that we saw at LSU all those years ago, and the fact that he wasn't trying to be Le'Veon Bell or LaDainian Tomlinson or LeSean McCoy and try to make cuts at the line. He's finding his hole right in the backfield and then running through it. He's plowing through those people who get in his way, and because he's already come up to speed and he's not just still tiptoeing around, he's got that momentum to be able to break tackles, the arm tackles that you mentioned.
Right.
He's making plays at that point. When Lenny has the speed and the momentum going, the dude has the mass to break any tackler in the league, and I think we saw that a lot when he's going through players like Chubb or Derek Wolf's even playing right now, you know, Von Miller, those guys on the outside. He's getting through not just that front line, but also through the secondary because he's able to come up to speed and he's not stuttering around the front.
Yeah, we also had a lot more mixed in with we had a kind of some of our H-backs playing. I forget who the guy is on our roster who plays that role. They were mentioning him on 1010, but he's rolling back there. I think sometimes it's Swaim. But sometimes it's the other tight end, Seth DeValve, who literally no one knows, and I didn't even know who it was until I had to look him up after the game to see who kept lining up at fullback. So I think that maybe one of the new kind of that might have been one of the changes that's freed him up a bit. We all know he kind of sucks when he doesn't have like a guy leading the way for him. So we started working that in. I think the good part is that that's not exclusively what we're relying on now to move the ball. So sometimes when you do have that strong eye formation, it's not quite the same exact level of doing the. It's not the same pattern that you're setting as it was last year. Now, I will say, I don't think, like I said earlier, the inside, the middle of Denver's defense is that good. We'll see next week if they can do that again with a much stronger Carolina Panthers defense.
That secondary that Panthers have compared to, I think Harris is probably the only notable member of the Broncos secondary right now. You know, you look at the linebackers that Carolina has, it's going to be, I think, a much more formidable challenge. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's like that game alone should have guys in Denver wondering, like, I mean, they've let a lot of good inside linebackers go. They're probably wishing they still had Danny Trevathan there right now.
Look at Shaq Harris. The guy's got 9 sacks in 4 games already for Tampa.
Yeah. Shaq Barrett.
Or Shaq Barrett, yeah. I mean, he's not exactly a a huge money guy either. That's somebody who would probably be very affordable to keep.
And yeah.
I think they're maybe trying to load up a bit too much on, let's save some money for this rebuild. And right now, I mean, they're letting the pieces go from what was a very, very good defense just last year.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Gardner. His first half was the whole team played poorly in the first half. His first half wasn't great. Wasn't notable. But in the second half, everyone stepped up in the second half. And, a lot of people will say, they'll call Leonard the player of the game, which, he was. The dude ran for 220 yards or something. It was nutty. Especially like that first drive in the third quarter, I was actually making tacos when the third quarter started. So I come in, when I get back into the office, it's like, and they're like 12 minutes. So there's like 3 minutes into the quarter and we're still going down the field. And then we're still going down on the field. Right. And Leonard's just pounding the ball and Minshew's making the short throws. Right. And it was just, you could tell it was clicking. And then as the game went on and Leonard kept running well, Minshew was hitting more and more throws and started taking shots down the field and everything. But in the third quarter, those two touchdowns that Minshew threw were fucking fantastic. That play where he evaded like the entire Denver's front seven and just kept his eyes in the end zone the entire time and then hit Rock wide open in the end zone. Like, that's something I don't think any Jaguars player, any Jaguars quarterback of the past can make that play. That was insane.
Somebody mentioned that he made like five reads on a play and he still didn't even go to one of those first five because he kept going back through, taking the time and making those quick reads while also keeping the awareness to not, you know, end the play behind the line of scrimmage. That's a huge difference looking in the past.
Right. Just his awareness on that one play in particular, his awareness of knowing that those guys are coming, which direction they're coming from, his evasiveness to get away from them, his awareness to stay behind the line of scrimmage and to keep his eyes down the field to make that pass. Like, it's off the charts how much awareness and football IQ this guy has. And I think it was on display in this game more so than any game so far this year.
Yeah, I think it shows an incredible amount of maturity for somebody who's, you know, 23 years old, coming into the league as a rookie, having played at four or five different schools. And I think, you know, maybe he took a little bit of something away from every one of those coaches, and especially I think you can tell with his experience with Mike Leach, where you play in an air raid offense and suddenly you've got to be able to make plays every time because to cover an air raid, you're having to throw a lot of secondary back there to cover everybody who's going out there. That experience absolutely played out because it's a style of offense that prepared for the pros, unlike anything that he'd previously, anything that we'd seen before with, you know, Tebow on the spread or so many quarterbacks who succeed in college. They come in, but they've not worked in a pro-style offense, whereas he absolutely has. He's got so much experience that he's able to translate into the NFL. I just can't speak enough to this guy's abilities coming in and the expectations that he's surpassed.
I do think we're going to really need all of that this coming weekend, because I don't think Leonard and the offensive line is going to have as much success in the run game against Carolina as they did against the Broncos by any means. I think it's going to once again fall on Gardner, and I'm hoping we get almost as much of a breakout game from Gardner against Carolina than as we did with Leonard here. If you can call it a breakout game, I still think that there's a lot of issues going on with that.
I'm curious how much of the success that the team saw this weekend with those halftime adjustments that they made. You know, we saw the team and how they were playing in the first half. You know, obviously something started clicking. I don't know if that was the running situation getting better because the Broncos were preparing like, oh, okay, here's this young gun who's the most accurate thrower in the league and can hit anybody on a dime. So they're throwing all these passes out and suddenly the passing game opens up. And now we're able to get the run in. Broncos are hard, you know, we're throwing out I formation and everything else, and, you know, they're confused as to what's going to come from that. So
it would definitely be good to have a balanced attack.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing in the past. You know, the Jags have been for the past few years a run-first offense, and now that we have legitimate attack on both sides, if we're able to throw out a balanced attack and something that's able to at least confuse the defense right up front when they're getting their first look, those first 5 seconds right there when you're going up to the line are some of the most important in the game. And
100%.
If the defense knows what they're looking at, then what's the point of playing?
Yeah. Again, I will say I hope that continues. I think it's going to be difficult if we do a lot of the same stuff we did against Denver. If we try to bring that into Carolina on the road again, I think we might get stomped out because for whatever reason, they stopped going to Philip Lindsay. But Carolina's, after Lindsay had a few decent carries in the first half, Carolina's not going to stop going to McCaffrey. And I mean, I think he's like twice the player that Philip Lindsay is.
Right.
He's having a monster year. And as a lot of people have alluded to, like, you know, Quincy Williams has been great. He's fast. He's all over the place, but he is still a rookie. Miles Jack has not exactly been playing his best year of football so far after his new contract. So we're hoping that the defensive line can try to bottle him up a little bit and that we get some decent play from the safeties and the linebackers. But I could see us really needing to lean heavily on the offense and heavily on the run defense this coming weekend.
Yeah, I think the defense is really going to be the difference maker in this game. When you've got a great weapon like Christian McCaffrey, somebody who's probably one of the top men, top 10 most talented players in this league, you've really got to rely on the defense to absolutely make plays and keep the ball out of his hands. I think back to the stat that I saw, that, you know, Kyle Allen has been sacked 5 times this season and has fumbled on every one of those.
Yeah.
This is a huge moment for Yannick Ngakoue to step up and get those sacks and get those, you know, get those fumbles again. And I know that he's playing on one leg right now, but I mean, this is bread and butter. And if we're able to do the same thing and keep that up with Kyle Allen this week, that's going to keep the ball out of the Panthers' hands, and if the Panthers aren't able to score with McCaffrey, then they're not going to be able to win this game.
Right. That's the one thing I'm worried about, though, is because the pass rush, and, you know, like JC, like you had said, it was a lot of quick releases with them just picking and abusing Trey Herndon. But if they can't get home, I mean, it was still incredibly disappointing for them against Denver when they really should have been able to produce something. But if they can't get home when Kyle Allen is throwing the ball, it's going to be a long day out there.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, this guy abused, like, whoever is in Arizona's secondary for 4 touchdowns. And he is throwing, like, he's throwing above 70%. He's doing a good job. He's, like, well, he's won both of his games now. So thank him for giving us a chance to stay in the division by beating Houston. But he can easily, very easily ruin our day the same way he ruined theirs. It's just going to require, I mean, again, this game was, I'm super happy we won. I'm super happy that Leonard Fournette had a good day and everyone balled out, but there's just, you know, we can't look as bad as we did against an 0-4 team and require a last second field goal. You can't take that crap into Carolina. They will walk all over us.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing that worries me is, you know, we've got to be able to stop them. And right now, if especially if Ramsey's not playing this week again, then what happens to our secondary here? Because we've still got Boye, who's playing a really great season so far, but Trey Herndon obviously showed what he was made of the other day, which was a little bit worrisome. And that also makes me kind of regret not being able to see Arizona play the Panthers offense with Patrick Peterson and with his suspension. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we were able to see, okay, well, here's what this defense can do with a legitimate weapon, then it might have been a different story that day. But as it is right now, we saw them with nobody, and that's almost what it feels like. We still have Boye, which is...
That's good, but Boye is just half the field, and unfortunately right now the other half is Trey Herndon, so I don't care what your feelings are on Jalen Ramsey, but this is not going to be a very strong defense if the pass rush isn't getting home and if Trey Herndon is out there as a starting corner. Like, if that's what it's going to be for the rest of the season, then you should probably call this season over with and start looking for dealing for those draft picks, because it's going to be a long time out there.
Yeah, I feel a little bit better that our front office at least made the smart decision to turn down the terrible deals that were reported for Kansas City and Philadelphia. You know, Jalen's not worth a 1 and a 2 from Philadelphia. Maybe if they threw Zach Ertz in there, because we're still needing a tight end. With Josh Oliver coming back, maybe that changes. But in Kansas City, I mean, 2 firsts are great if it's anybody but them, because
yeah,
you know, what
like
good
them
is
and the Patriots.
Pick?
Yeah, and it's at least and they're AFC teams. I don't want to see this dude have him. Even if it's Gardner, I don't want to see him shutting down our team and abusing our wide receivers right. for the next 10 years. Like, and so, I mean, it's just for the people who really want to deal Jalen right now, then you're really throwing away this season, because Trey Herndon, he's probably a good prospect and can make some decent outside corner depth, but you don't want this man starting. If Joe Flacco is going to tear this guy to pieces, imagine what an actually like really good quarterback and wide receiver combo is going to do.
I'd be
fine with replacing him. If we could have any decent number two CB in the league, it would be pretty good. If you could throw out like just whatever league average corner, then that would be fine. But we apparently don't have that guy. So if Jalen's not going to play for the rest of the year, it's going to be trouble. But that's why I think you don't rush in any sort of trade deal, and you get him back on the field as soon as he's healthy, which ideally is this weekend. If he's on the field this weekend, I feel a lot better going into this game.
Yeah, me too.
I'm really curious what, if anything, changes Jalen's mind about playing in Jacksonville. I mean, if it's Tom Coughlin, you know, being out of the picture, then I think the Jaguars obviously have a huge decision to make about, you know, the kind of not necessarily chain of command of their entire team, but it's a big message to send to the league. I think you saw recently with, you know, everybody in the NFL, all these big stars are trying to be more and more like the NBA, where they're kind of running the show, they deal their own free agency, and they demand trades. And in the NBA, you sort of can do that because it's such a small team compared to the NFL. But with AB going out there against the Raiders, you know, just towards the end of training camp, he basically had to ruin his entire likeness to go out there, to the point that, you know, only the Patriots were crazy enough to sign him. If you're willing to get rid of a front office person to appease a player, especially a well-respected one like Coughlin, that's a big decision to make. And I think it sets a precedent for the league and sends a message, especially going into a new CBA year. It's interesting. I really don't know what else could keep Jalen, though, and it's not really for us to assume, I guess, not knowing him.
I think it's just like, even I don't even care where you stand on it, like, about Jalen and all these idiots in the sub come bringing their Facebook quality takes into it about him and Tom Coughlin. If you're going to do it, you need to get as much football out of him this season as you can. Because, again, this is not a lost season yet. Everyone in the division is 2-2. But if Jalen goes and you're starting Trey Herndon to cover half the field for the rest of the season, then it very much is a lost season. And we will quickly see this division start slipping out of our hands.
Imagine
Hopkins on him.
Do you want to see Trey Herndon cover DeAndre Hopkins or T.Y. Hilton? Or
I don't. Like, I didn't want to see him cover Cortland Sutton, but I had to.
I would love to see Boye on both of them. He's got better statistics against Hopkins than anybody else out there, I think, other than Jalen.
I think any offensive coordinator can be creative enough. Well, here's the thing. I mean, it wasn't even really like it's Emmanuel Sanders and Cortland Sutton. I think had both TDs on him. Maybe Noah Fant had one, but. I don't even think it matters if it's a rookie tight end or if it's like a sophomore wide receiver or if it's DeAndre Hopkins or Will Fuller or whoever. It's just such a gaping hole in what should be at least a decent defense approaching above average level. You throw Jalen in there and it's still an elite defense, I think, in my mind, because I think at that point the coverage gives those pass rushers enough time to get home. If it's Jalen out there, then you can't just be doing those 3-step drops and letting it fly, because he's going to have his man locked down. But Trey Herndon is too often like running it after a dude's numbers 3 yards past him. So a lot of our sacks from like in 2017 were coverage sacks. Like the whole game against the Colts where we had 10 sacks against Jacoby Brissett, was a lot of that shit was coverage sacks. Everyone say he held on the ball too long, but it's because you got a guy like Jalen shutting down T.Y. Hilton. So if you don't have that guy, then I don't understand what some of these people are saying. Oh, you know, corner's not that important. You're about to learn if he's out for a significant time, or if he has played his last game, then they're about to learn.
Yeah, the same knocks that you could put on, you know, Deshaun Watson for holding onto the ball too long. You can do the same thing with Brissett, and that's why you see, you know, the Jaguars just eat these guys up. When they hold onto the ball so long, you know, it's because we've got great guys in our secondary who are covering these guys so long that they can't get their read. And so they're trying to run, scramble, and still make the play rather than just throwing it away.
Yeah. And as exciting as Minshew is, he's not stacking numbers up on people. He's not throwing four touchdowns like Kyle Allen is. So yeah. At that point, so I question the ability of our offense to hang with some of these. They're not even good teams. It was the 0-4 Broncos that were just absolutely eating out there with Joe Flacco. So it gives me pause. It should give everyone pause about trading Jalen. If you do, I do think he will come back when his injuries are healed, and you're definitely going to need him. Even if this is his last season playing football for the Jaguars, get what you can out of him this season, because it could mean playoffs. But again, if he's not here, if he gets traded prematurely, or if he's out for a while with injury, it's going to get ugly.
Yeah, to me, there's three scenarios with Jalen. One, he comes back, he's healthy, he plays, and he helps succeed. And then the other two are if he's traded, then they need to either, one, get somebody in return who's going to be able to cover at least almost as well as he could. So getting a player who can cover the corner in return as well as those picks, or getting somebody who's going to help out on offense to where we can actually go out and score more to make up for what we're now going to probably suffer at the hands of Herndon and others.
Oh, hey, so just speaking of the devil, just posted on the sub from IndyStar through AP, Jaguars owner has no plans to trade Jalen Ramsey. He said that the best thing is to have him be a part of the team. He spoke exclusively to AP today. And so he said that I'm scanning the article right now.
It's a good source.
We value the values that Jalen adds to us, to the Jaguars. I think we value him highly. We're still looking at what is the right thing for the Jaguars, and I think right now the best thing is to have him be part of a team. Well, no shit. Like,
that's why he's the owner.
Yeah, I mean, he's the owner, and this, so he's gotten a lot more hands-on right now. Khan said he met with Jalen too. Well, yeah, and honestly, like, I'm sure the relationship between Coughlin and Jalen has been ruined, but clearly the relationship between Jalen and Khan has not been ruined if he's speaking like this on him. Also interesting that, you know, Khan is speaking out to AP reporters about this, but Coughlin is nowhere to be heard of from, you know, because he's probably even being told by Khan, don't even talk to the media because you'll say some stupid shit, and then I will have to fire you on the spot.
I am now genuinely curious when the last time Coughlin made some sort of public comment was, other than maybe unless he's spoken at a press conference during a, you know, or after a game. It's because all of these things that you saw, you know, with Fournette last year and getting called out for things, and Jalen this year not being at camp, getting called out for things, you know, those were Coughlin speaking to the media and speaking out for himself. And I'm wondering if there's been conversations now in the back of the room where Shad is having to say, stop it, because you're ruining our relationships with our players. If you're going to say something, then it needs to run by me first.
Yeah, but in the past, he's always been the type of guy to be like, okay, look, I'm going to let the football people do the football things. So you know some shit's about to go down when he's actually getting involved in team management. Hopefully,
yeah,
that,
at,
hopefully the end of that is Coughlin getting fired and put into an old person's home.
Yeah, you look at his statement last year where he said 2019 is going to be a big year for the Jaguars organization. They're going to need to perform. And if they don't, then, you know, changes are made. But that came after the Jaguars went on a huge losing streak, and people were clamoring for everybody to be fired at that point. So, you know, things have obviously gotten awry when Khan's out there making public statements, because that almost never happens unless it has to do with the stadium or some big new partnership.
Yeah. Well, I think that you know, the season's going to go one or two ways. If Jalen stays out for the whole time, or even if he comes back, maybe things could go south. We lose a bunch of games. Some glaring holes on the team are unfixed, and things go south. Then Coughlin's getting fired because the team, you know, there's no excuse from it. On the other hand, if things go great, we even make a playoff berth or anything, I think Coughlin still gets fired. And then we retain Jalen, which I would much rather prefer that to be the outcome. But
yeah,
I mean,
Jalen's,
I think, there's less of a chance of Coughlin being on this team next year than Jalen. And Jalen's chance is still, like, I think 50-50.
Yeah.
But
I think at the end of the day, Coughlin does not do nearly as much to help the team win as Jalen does. The goal of this franchise is to win, to bring a Super Bowl to Jacksonville, and to make Shad Khan as much money as is humanly possible. And Jalen Ramsey is going to be the one to do that if you're weighing him versus Tom Coughlin.
Oh, yeah, he's a brand. I mean, Minshew's kind of becoming a brand, but before Minshew, like, Jalen is the brand. He's the strongest one. And it's a shame that you want to see that leave Jacksonville. So even from, like, a business perspective, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Thank God for Jerry Jones a few years ago.
Jerry Jones has resigned his extended his player from that draft class, and we still haven't. So,
I mean, Jalen is, other than Bosa, who, you know, arguably shouldn't have been extended at this point because he's been hurt so many times, Jalen's the only one from that top five who's not been resigned.
From the top five, yeah. And there's been, I've had this argument with people before. It's not just him. There's multiple players in that draft class that have been re-signed. A lot more of them in the second round. And people are like, well, that's what the fifth-year option is for. And I'm like, no, well, that just makes the fifth-year option bullshit. It's just an extended franchise tag. At this point, a player of Jalen's brand and reputation and caliber and importance to the team should be treated the same way that you see, like, Michael Thomas with his holdout and getting his extension. Just because Michael Thomas is, what, a second rounder and didn't have a fifth-year option? There's no excuse for, you know, not having re-signed guys like Jalen and Yannick at this point. And, again, that responsibility lays at the feet of Caldwell and Coughlin, and if they don't get it done, then tremendous failure. And people are really kind of not taking that very seriously.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the biggest issue that people are bringing forward at this point is, you know, why? And I think the biggest argument that Jalen has and best reason for him to be upset is, why are you re-signing guys like Blake? Why are you re-signing guys like Miles Jack? And to Miles' credit, he's a great player and a great leader, but he is not Jalen Ramsey. He's not a generational talent, and he's not a brand. Jalen is more than just what he is as a player. And if I'm Jalen Ramsey, I'm thinking, why are all these guys getting signed to these big deals and I'm still getting paid my rookie contract and they're going to string me along for as long as possible?
Yeah. I mean, I ran up at this a lot more last week, or whenever the last pod we did was. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's so stupid. And I do still believe that's where the main source of his complaint stems from. Although now it's just because Coughlin's just being a complete dickhead. And, you know, you could say, oh, he won two Super Bowls, but he did that as a coach. It's pretty clear he does not have the first clue, or at least does not bring the same value he did as a coach for the Giants, 10 years ago? He doesn't bring that value as a team executive.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, a coach's mind, I think, is a lot different than a GM. And their effect on the field, I think, it's a lot more apparent. When you've got a great coach, you keep him. When you've got a great player, you definitely keep him because they're the ones who are going to make the most immediate effect on the field. You know, if you've got a great GM and you've got the ones out there, I mean, Bill Belichick, he's a GM, But at the end of the day, he's not that great of one. He's just a great coach. Mm-hmm. So you see kind of the difference between the two roles, even though they're the same person. It's just, I think, really, you can find good players and turn them into great players by having good coaching. Good coaches are what make good players great, and any GM can find good players. When you have great ones, though, you keep them. When you have a coach who can make good players great, you keep them.
It's just got, it's all got to work in harmony together from, and I think that harmony extends all the way up to ownership. I mean, how many teams with bad ownership end up being that successful of franchises over time? It's, the answer is almost zero, but teams with good ownership can make miracles happen, and then you can have some really special franchises. So I think the only missing link between all that shit is, yet again, Tom Coughlin. He's the only one that's really disrupting that whole flow from player through coach, GM, to the ownership. So it's really a damn shame that this is the thing that's hope, that's kind of always going to be the thorn in the side this season, when we should just be enjoying Gardner and enjoying a renewed defense.
Yeah, it's an issue of organizational philosophy. I mean, if you go to any workplace and you're confused about who the chain of command is, you know, it's difficult to respond to, and it creates issues. You know, if you got players who are out there on the field and they don't know, you know, who's this guy that's doling out, you know, consequences for my actions here, I understand if that's the coach and Doug Marone's out there saying, yeah, you screwed up, you're the one who's going to pay for it now, you're going to sit out this game. But if Tom Coughlin, who sits in an office all day and is hardly ever out on the field, is going out and making these decisions, what is the purpose of the coach other than to call plays?
Or what's the purpose of the GM? If it, like, I think the fact that we still don't know what the hell Coughlin actually does in there is troublesome. I thought that was troublesome for Caldwell, but yeah, at first I was like, oh, that, you know, I don't understand how those kind of relationships have to be toxic as hell in there, and that's well before this Jalen drama happened.
Yeah, I just don't understand the whole point of bringing in Coughlin from the beginning other than to instill maybe, you know, a sense of discipline and just to be that person. But don't call him the, you know, the vice president of player personnel or whatever he is. Call him a character consultant if that was the main concern, because now he's gone in and he's essentially the the commissioner of our entire team, where he's like, yeah, I get to make all the decisions except for maybe what plays are called. And even then, if I don't like what plays are called, I'll fire Doug Marone. I just don't understand the checks and balances of his position or his real purpose.
I don't think anyone does, and if they do, they're probably lying. I don't even think they do in that building.
Yeah,
but yeah.
New
that's clearly a problem.
Tom Roger Goodell Coughlin. So maybe it's just to take all the flack, but people in Jacksonville tend to love Coughlin for his early years. But I think if we see a player like Jalen leave, then that might turn very quickly, and I think we're starting to see how that is going to affect the team just based on the reactions from the past couple of weeks now that so much of this has come out.
JC, what else you got?
I was letting you guys run with it.
I have to keep cutting myself off because eventually I'm gonna just keep repeating myself.
Yeah, I actually gotta run, guys. But I appreciate you having me on today. It was a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, dude, for sure,
Man.
Yeah, we'll get you on again. We'll get you on for a full episode and not a little not bring you in halfway through. And
I'm excited to see what goes on the frog.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, I'm probably gonna work on that. Either tonight or Friday night. I'll be at the Avalanche game tomorrow night, but I'll actually be in Jacksonville for the Chargers game in December. So if any of you guys are there, let me know.
All right, cool. All right, Razor, we'll let you go, and then Lox and I'll wrap up here.
Take it easy, guys. Thanks
right.
for having me on.
Yep, later, bud. All right. I'm glad Razor got to stop by at least for a little bit and talk about some things. It was nice to have another take on Ramsey, because you and I and Crom have just run that shit into the ground as much as we've talked about it on these pods. So it was nice to have somebody else on and talk about it for a bit.
Yeah, of course. Even though we all keep standing in agreement.
Yeah, right. It's weird, right?
It's because we only have intelligent people on.
Yeah.
Here.
No idiots allowed. So yeah, thanks a lot for Razor, for coming on. One thing, we kind of went off on a tangent there with Jalen and everything. I wanted to mention, because I can't get over it. From the time the game ended Sunday, every like highlight I see of the game, every time someone's talking about the game this past week, that final drive, so much, like the wide receivers deserve so much credit for the position that we were in that final drive to be where we were for that field goal.
Oh, yeah, my boy Reichwell. Oh, you mean on the final one, yeah.
Yeah, like, on that very, I mean, throughout the entire second half, but it really stood out to me on the final drive because you had the one play to Dede where he danced down the sideline for like 10 yards, right? And then you had the one play to Connolly where he drug a defender for 10 yards. So like I don't know. I just felt like the receivers really put in so much effort to inch us even closer. And I felt like that was crucial in that situation. And you and I talked about it last night. The only thing I was really concerned about on that final drive was how much the wind was going to affect Lambeau. And I feel like those guys really fought for those extra yards and got Lambeau in a good position where the wind... Where he wasn't fighting against the wind, you know, the wind wasn't going to have that much effect on his kick. So I just want to give like tons of credit to the receivers.
Oh yeah, I mean it's the difference between that and like I feel like in years past, even when we put ourselves in that position, it was just really nickel and diming it until you got him in for like a 50 yarder as opposed to whatever it finally ended up being, where it was still a chip shot even with the wind.
Right. But yeah, all the receivers
and we did it through the air, not just like trying to. A piddly effort on the ground.
Exactly. All the receivers really stepped up. Rock caught a couple of passes. He had a couple of really good runs. A
couple nice runs there, yeah, when he had to spell Fournette. We're really going to need a lot more than that because Fournette's inevitably going to get hurt or at least banged up to the point where he's not as effective, the same way he was in his rookie year after he had the injury that really slowed him down going down the stretch there. So
right.
They really have to work this more towards even closer to a 50-50. I still don't understand why this team like wants to run the ball apparently so much, only has two running backs on the roster.
Right.
And I don't care that there's technically more than two. Those other guys are nobodies. So.
And while we're crediting people, a ton of credit to James O'Shaughnessy too.
He's been so damn good out there, both like in the like blocking in space. He's not really an inline blocker, but blocking in space and being like an effective weapon to kind of sneak out of there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, O'Shaughnessy's been great. That touchdown pass, the double pump fake, and then the seam route. O'Shaughnessy ran that perfectly. That was
still an amazing pass. He even with all the fakes and redirecting the defense, like that dude almost still got a hand on it. That was still a like an inch perfect pass by
Right,
Minshew.
Right. It was such a perfect play. It was such good play calling. It blew my mind when I saw that play. I was like, "What the fuck happened?" Because I thought we swung it out. I thought we swung it out to the left, and then I was like, "No." And then when he pump faked to Fournette, I thought he threw it. Like he fooled me twice. So like.
Yeah,
I'm watching on TV. I can see the whole field, and he fooled me twice. So I can't imagine, like it just worked. It just worked so well. It was such a perfect play call. Kudos to everyone for executing that play, and then O'Shaughnessy for running a good route, Minshew for making a good pass and really selling those first two pump fakes. It was beautiful, man. So yeah, I guess let's wrap it up. I do want to mention, because I haven't mentioned yet, the long Fournette run, the 81 yarder. I'm glad he was able to break off a long one after, putting up good yardage all day.
Should have been a touchdown, but
it should have. It could have been. I have my theories on as to why he did what he did when he got far. I think he was tired. I think he didn't think he could beat the guy behind him. So he tried to be a little shifty or whatever. It should have been a touchdown, but still, kudos to him for finally breaking off another big one.
Something that he doesn't actually have yet this year.
Right. It's crazy that he had 220 yards and not a touchdown. So, but
Gardner's been that effective in the red zone. So fortunately you haven't had to go to him
exactly.
there, but yeah.
Apparently, if I remember correctly from what I saw today or yesterday, Gardner has been the most efficient quarterback in the red zone this year.
I think I heard that too, and I believe it. He's been deadly down there.
Yeah, it was such a fun, at least second half to watch. I'm so happy to see the Jags come from like a compromising position and come back and win that game. That was incredible, and I hope I don't have another heart attack this Sunday when I join you and Kramatos and Churro and all the BCB guys in Charlotte for the Carolina game.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, we're going to be there, the four of us from the sub and then a bunch of other guys on the other BCB travel game. So if you're listening and you're going to be there, let us know and hunt us down and we'll pound a beer or something. So it'll be fun. I'm thinking of doing some kind of live videos from if we tailgate or party or what the fuck ever,
Yeah.
Let you guys in on what's going on.
The beer is going to be a Steel Reserve, by the way. That's Chrome's rule, not ours.
Yeah.
I fully endorse that, so be prepared.
Yeah, Steel Reserve is fucking disgusting, but, I'm down. all right, Lox. Well, it is definitely my bedtime, so I guess we'll wrap it up. And then the next time I'm sure I'll talk to you before Sunday, but
all right.
But the next time we get on the pod will be after the game, and we'll be able to bullshit about the shenanigans in Charlotte. So, yeah. Thanks for hanging out, dude.
Sounds good. Always, man. It's always a pleasure.
All right. See you guys later.